we in America should be grateful to God for the blessings he's given us.
Don't let anyone tell you that America's best days are behind her.
We have got to fight for this nation, because I believe with all my heart this nation is in fact one nation under God.
All right, let me go to Lou. Lou's calling us from Oklahoma. Hi, Lou.
Hi, how you doing today?
Good morning. Good.
Wonderful. So, I think there's been some changes with some tax rules for pastors. I'm just curious if you might be able to help me answer some questions on that.
Well, I'll try.
Okay. Because it seems like we can no longer deduct our mileage and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But what I was doing right now, so because it's coming more of a burden of how much I have to pay in taxes than actually being a pastor. And I'm bi-locational. Uh-huh. And so all the money I would get back from my other job, I pretty much have to pay on my pastor-owned taxes, like income and whatnot. So this year what I did is I decided to put all my pastoral income directly to my school loan. And so they say that doesn't count as income since it doesn't come to me directly.
Right.
Now, my school loan is about ready to get paid off, which I'm thankful for. But I'm wondering now, can I put that money to another loan or to somewhere else so that way I can continue to do that so it doesn't count as income?
Well, how is it going to the school loan? Is the church sending it directly?
Yes, sir. The church is sending it directly to the school loan.
Yeah. So, I mean, another type loan, let's say a mortgage or car loan or anything else you might have, credit cards. Technically, if they were to do that on another loan, you would have to pay tax unless they, you know, for one reason or another, did not include that in a 1099 or W-2, whatever they give you at the end of the year. So, it's really kind of skating on the outer fringes of the rules there. And I would probably tell you to, you know, call H&R Block and, you know, or if unless you have somebody else that prepares your taxes, or Google that rule on student loan. And read if it applies to anything else and how it does. But that would be a little rough to do. So
yeah, and that's what I was curious about, because they talk about I can do this account, an expense account, and so I didn't know, since like if I did towards my car loan, I use my car all the time for ministry. I mean, would that connect to that somehow kind of thing?
Yeah, I don't think it would. I don't think it would. Because even, you know, and you got to have, you just don't want to flag, you know, flag anything. I don't think it would.
I want to do things the right way.
Yeah. I don't think it would. I think, unfortunately, you know, now, do they withhold taxes or they just pay you straight 1099?
They just pay me straight money, and so I'm responsible to withhold my own withholdings and everything. And then I had a pastor friend who told me that if he requests that his tithe gets taken out before him, then that tithe that they took off of him is not counted as income.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, they can do that. The only other thing you can do is increase your deductions. I mean, lower your deductions. How many dependents do you deduct out of your pay on your regular job now?
Well, it's just me and my wife. So I think I'd be like a one or something like that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you could go to zero. That would help a little bit. By the way, and I just tell you this for everybody listening, it doesn't matter how many dependents you actually have. If you want to declare 8 dependents to get more money, you can do that as long as you don't file with 8 dependents.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go to your employer and say, you know what, I want to declare the maximum dependents, and you'll bring more take-home pay home. And that's how you balance that for people that say, you know, I don't really want to get all this money back at the end of the year. I'd rather get it throughout the year so you can balance it by doing that. That's not what you're asking. It's off the topic, but I just thought I'd use it as a coachable moment for everybody. So the only thing you could do is you go to zero dependents. They'll withhold more tax, and that'll help you a little bit. So anyway, yeah.
Well, I think my particular case, and I appreciate your help and all that, I think I'm just going to ask them to withhold all my tithes because I'm blessed in such a way that the amount that I pay in tithes is the amount that I receive back from the church. And so if I just tell them to do all my check to tithing, then I would think that would I'm still paying my tithes.
Right.
So I'm still being faithful to the Lord that way.
And it's not coming out of your normal, you know, your other income. Yeah.
Yeah. And then also I'm not claiming an income on my taxes. And so I'm not breaking any rules.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that would be the way to do it for sure. If you can do that.
Yeah, because like I said, my school loan is coming up to be paid off. And I mean, I love doing the ministry, but I'm not trying to find loopholes or anything, but I'd rather find a way to not feel that burden on me each time I've got to go file taxes.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, I don't blame you. Yeah, I think that'll be the best bet. Thanks, Lou. I'm glad you called.
Thank you.
All right, wish you all the best. God bless. Let me go to Scott in Mississippi. Hey, Scott. I'm sorry about that.
That's okay, Dan.
I got off track. Anyway, you had another question.
Yes, since we're talking about these income portfolio, can you mind telling what exactly you're looking at when you move in the income stocks on and off the broad list? What makes them go on and off?
Well, I can't tell you what does that. It would take a couple hours. You can watch a video about my overall strategy. It's a long video. It's about 13 minutes, 15 minutes. You can find that and it give you the overall. I don't treat an income stock except for four or five maybe different factors. But everything I look at gets run through about 21 different technicals, things that has to qualify them to get on my buy list. After that, and that happens automatically every Sunday night, after that, a lot of it depends upon different behavioral numbers. That is far more an art than it is a science. So I weight each technical very differently. So I may have a technical that I run through that wouldn't be technically a technical for other analysts. It is for me, and I may weight one a lot heavier than I would weight another one as whether that should impact whether it should go on the buy list or not. For instance, I have restaurant stocks that I weight with different technicals than I do technology stocks, and I have technology stocks that I weight with some different technicals than I do industrials. So I had somebody build me my a software program that runs all of that through based on, you know, what they are. I haven't changed that in about 8 years. So so all of that gets run through a very, very unique set of technicals. Then it may be a behavior. In other words, I may look at a company that passes with flying colors, which I would say is 70% of my companies. No, not 70, not now. Now it's probably down to about 55. But might pass a lot of technicals that could get on my buy list. But I'm looking at the company and I say, wait a minute, this whole sector is in trouble. This whole company is in trouble. They have too much debt. They have far too much, they have no free cash flow. It looks like their free cash flow is going to go negative by the time we get to the third or fourth quarter. I weigh all those things into it. So I couldn't say, well, I do this, this, and this, and that's all you have to worry about. If I could do that, I'd probably write a book and retire.
Well, thank you, Dan. I appreciate it. I appreciate all that you did.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Scott. Welcome back to Financial Issues. Yesterday, we talked about capitalism, socialism. That's what this series is. We're going to continue to do that. We've got a couple more days of this. And today we're going to talk about probably one of the most important things in a society, and that is employment or unemployment. But it's obviously key to a thriving society. And I would say it's a key to a socialist society as well as a capitalist society. Both need to be able to put people to work. But there are some stark differences. See, in capitalist society, unemployment is a very negative thing because you only have unemployment if there aren't jobs to hire people. And the only reason there would be for not having job opportunities for people is because the economic time is not well. The economy is struggling in one way, shape, or form. The economy is not thriving enough that companies feel as though they need to hire people, or for that matter, even keep people on the payroll because they're not selling enough goods or services. So there's no need to do that. So they would be laying off people or not hiring people. And this generally is in times of recession and depression or downturns in the country. So in times of recession, it's going to be very hard to see levels of employment that are very good. We are going to see in times of a recession or depression, GDP growth, everything slows dramatically. One of the greatest downturns that we ever have seen that lasted the longest was, of course, during the Great Depression. And if you think things are bad now in the outcries and the scream for socialism, remember there were people during the Great Depression that couldn't eat. We had a government that supplied soup kitchens and different things. So we didn't have children starving to death on the streets like we even see today in China. We didn't have that. But there was no work. There was no work. Prices were extremely high as inflation, and the dollar was dramatically devalued. And there was just no, the prices, inflation, it was hyperinflation, was very, it might have cost you a dollar for an egg. It was a very, very difficult time. And the outcries for socialism, the outcries for more and more and more and more government support. These were people that never would have dreamed of being taking anything from the government. It's not what their mindset was. They had little choice. They had no opportunity at all. And with fewer and fewer opportunities and more hunger and bigger and family responsibilities, it became apparent that these people were going to want more and more from the government. So you provide us soup once a day. Why not twice a day? How about three times a day? Can you survive? Can you supply us with a roof over our head? Can you Give us transportation that is free. And on it went. But you know, the majority of the American people, even in that crisis, believed that it was going to pass and it was going to get better. My father was a young man in his 20s during the Depression. And he told me the stories of farmers way out in the middle of the state, in the middle of nowhere, that very seldom left their little community. It took them a while to find out and to read and to understand how bad this Depression was. They didn't think much of it. They didn't buy food. They grew food. They canned. They jarred up what they needed. And when prices got out of control, they bartered with each other, with the ranch or the farm next door, and so on and so forth. And so it was very different then. That would be very difficult today, obviously. But only in a capitalist society could a group of people last. During times of 20%, yes, 20% unemployment, there was almost a quarter of the people in the country were unemployed. It wasn't pretty. It was ugly. It was painful during the Great Depression. But only in a true capitalist society with people that understood even then in the late 20s, early 30s, understood the opportunities that they had. And they desperately wanted to get the opportunities back. They didn't desperately want to just get fed. They wanted to get back to the opportunity. We had the majority of these people, immigrants, they came here for opportunity. Not like the times that followed when they came here, but there were a lot of immigrants. They understood this. See, in socialism, there is no 20% unemployment unless for some strange reason that's what they wanted. See, in socialism, if there was 20% unemployment, they would risk an uprise of the people. That would be a problem. Socialism, it only mattered that the state could keep operating. That's all that mattered. They didn't have to worry about unemployment because they could keep people employed. You could dig a ditch on the first shift and have the second shift come in and fill up the hole and the ditch. You could keep people working. A modern day example of this is Japan. Japan, I don't know if you remember, 5 years ago, it was the lost decade. 10 years of nothing happening. People couldn't make any more money. Yes, there was no inflation. There were no wages getting any higher. But everybody was working. They were able to put food on the table. That would be somewhat of a modern socialism. It wasn't like that in many times during socialism. But employment meant every worker needed to work, doing anything that is particularly essential for the economy of the state. Whatever that might be. And it's important that in socialism, that is one of the things that we hear talk about now. There's no unemployment. Because oftentimes, even when socialists can't provide the jobs, they are still paying the people. I mean, sometimes it's forced early retirement. Now, they're not getting ahead. They're barely paying their bills. They have very little quality of health care. Some would say that this kind of socialism is associated with Keynesianism. You've heard that term. It's called demand management. They demand, the management, the state, demands you would work, and you would work. They would demand and dictate what you get paid in an attempt to stimulate an economy. You didn't have to worry about companies working their way out or demand from customers being high. The management would just demand that you would do certain things and people would feel better because they would work and maybe the economy would somehow pull out of the slump that it was in. And keep in mind, they would say that about Keynesianism, but Keynes himself was not by any means a socialist. See, unemployment or employment by not being productive is not really employment at all. You're not getting ahead. You're getting by. During the Depression, people got by. They got a meal. They did what they could and they got by. But they didn't really have a job. And they became more understanding of how important it was to be productive in a job. They got a much greater understanding of how productivity leads to more opportunity. In socialism, generation after generation, now they have no idea. They don't understand that because the system has been ruined through generations, and it would probably take a real deep socialist country, three generations, to break into a capitalist society and have full understanding of it. Now, maybe not. Maybe they would come to the realization that this is better. But remember, in that no-work environment in a socialist society, not only don't they have opportunity, they have very little money. And when things slump in the economy, there's no flow of income to the society, and things get a lot worse. Taxes generally go up if you are working, and they're already maybe 60 or 70%. So keep that in mind when you're talking to your socialist friends or those that want to be in that. They have to give up any hopes or ideas for their kids or for themselves to have any real opportunity to have prosperity and a lifestyle that is very different than what they might have in a socialist society. Thank you for being with us. I hope you'll be back tomorrow. Enjoy the rest of the show. God bless. Welcome back. Financial Issues, 844-707-5533, 844-707-5533. We're going to go right to phones. Let me get to Lynn. Lynn's calling us from Oregon. Hey, Lynn.
Good morning, Dan. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you.
I have a question that hopefully will help me and maybe others as well.
Okay.
I know that we hang on to stocks if they're income producing, and that's our goal, is to have more income rather than growth.
Yes.
However, I'm kind of in that area where I'm moving out of the growth and into the income. And so I have stocks I've had for a while, or maybe not. But the question is, when do you sell them? I hear some people call in and they'll say, well, I'm going to sell mine. I'm up 10%. Other people, oh, I had 100% growth and I sell it. And so I don't really know when to pull the trigger on that. It seems buying is a lot easier than selling.
It is. It really is. So here's a good thing to remember. If a stock that you're contemplating selling, and let's say, you know, you've had it for a few years or, you know, as long, whatever, and it's up maybe, you know, overall 10 or 15, 20% or whatever it might be, and you're thinking you want to sell it, you can never In my opinion, you can't go wrong by selling it. You know, it's never a bad idea to take what is profit only on paper and put that profit in your pocket, so to speak. There, it's never a bad idea to do that. Now, there are thousands, the vast majority of financial analysts that would probably argue my point on that. The reason they would argue with me on that is because they have been conditioned that you keep things that are up in your portfolio because it makes the whole portfolio look better, and people tend to be off my back, my clients calling me, because they look at their overall portfolio and they're still up because of those really good positions. So they're kind of conditioned to think like that. I manage a institutional one of the university annuity pools that I manage. They say 3-4 times, every 7-8 years, I hear it, usually when a new board member comes in, they say, well, you know, why did we start the year up so much and we're down this year by 10%? I'm just making numbers up. And I say, well, we're not. You need to look not at the bottom line and the percentage that we're down. You need to look at how much money we have. So take out any deposits. And at the end of the year, when we were up 30% or whatever it was, we had, you know, $18 million. Now we've got $21 million, but we're down. No, we're down from a percentage perspective on the investments that we have, but we have more money because I sold off a lot of positions that were up significantly. So do we really care whether we're up, or do we care that we have more money this year than we did last year? And, you know, I have to condition them about that, because that's not how they're conditioned to look at things. So we have, that's why I say, yes, people will sell off. I sold off all my positions, and here I am 6 months later, and I'm down on my portfolio. I was up doing so well. Are you really, though? Look at your money. Look at the amount that you have. Do you have more than you had, you know, before you started selling all those things off? I would submit to you that you probably do. So, oh, yeah, I see that. Okay, that makes sense. All right, I get it. You know, I mean, it just, but there's a conditioning there. So you can't go wrong by selling off your profits. Now, I don't think that, particularly if it is a foundational stock, those ones that are highlighted in yellow, I'm saying, look, don't sell. Why? Don't sell them. Just keep them in there, because they will be a cornerstone. They may not be the first 2-3 years, but eventually they will be the cornerstone of your portfolio that is just giving you a good, secure feeling and keeping things together, because they're going to be those good old steady, strong companies and consistent. They're not setting the world on fire. They're not going to grow through the roof, but they're just strong and they're going to stay strong. So it's always good to, you know, keep some of those. So I don't think, I would never sell a stock merely to take profit that was only up, you know, 8% or something. I probably wouldn't do that, or wouldn't recommend that. I'd probably tell you to wait. And let me just say this, Lynn, you probably have heard me say on a conference call, but that strategy of taking profits has only been a strategy about 4 times of mine in the last 30 years. It's not something that is something that I employ on a very regular basis. It really isn't. I did it January a year ago. It turned out to be a very, very good thing, as the Lord would have it, that we made that call and changed that strategy. When I did it, I said, it's probably going to be 6 months to a year. I don't know if you were a partner there or remember that. But when I did it, I said, I don't know. I may stop this in 6 months. But I have a sneaky suspicion. When I did that in January, I said, a couple years ago, I said, I think it's probably going to go to the first quarter of next year. Well, here we are. We're still in it. But so it's not something that is a regular, consistent strategy moving forward for somebody that is, you know, going to be doing this for the next 30 years. But again, even if it's not part of the strategy, you can't go wrong by doing it. Now, that probably doesn't help you much. But
well, it's still kind of vague, but it does.
Yeah. So all I would say to you is you can do this. You can pick a number, and you can say, you know, if something's up 20%, I'm selling it.
Okay.
And just get into that mode, or say, I'm only going to sell what I need. I'm going to let things ride out because I'm a long-term investor. And when you're a long-term investor, in other words, you're building a portfolio for the next 20 years or whatever it is long-term, the chances are you're not going to have to experience the ride down. You will have a ride down, but you will never participate in it because you're a long-term investor, meaning you're not going to sell out or have to sell out. So it is going to ride back up again, and probably when it comes up, it's going to come up stronger. They 98% of the time do. So you're not going to have to experience a loss. If you've got 3 years and you say in 2 or 3 years, I want my whole portfolio to be an income portfolio and I need to start liquidating some of the growth, then to me, it becomes somewhat of a no-brainer. Take that growth stock that's up 25% and sell out of it. Because your goal is to build that income portfolio. May take you a couple years to do it, but now you don't have the benefit of time to ride it back down and wait for it to come back up again because you want to start turning it over into an income portfolio. So do it while you can now if you're trying to build that income portfolio.
Can I ask you about one specific
company? Sure.
Yes. Mm-hmm. IN25. That one has had a nice run, and so I am up in it. Does that have more room to run? I guess that's always my question.
Sure.
Do I sell now, or does it have a little bit more? Should I keep going? Because it has done pretty well.
Is it is this one of the stocks that you would want to to include the money from it into an income portfolio?
Eventually, I don't have an income stock that I, you know, want to immediately get into necessarily. It's just, is this one, is it a good time to sell this one, or is it going to have some more growth in the next, say, 6 months to a year?
You said IN25, right?
Yes.
And you're up?
Yes.
I would sell it.
I'm up 41%.
I would definitely sell it.
Okay.
I would definitely sell it. I mean, some of the run-up in this stock is based on a couple of things that there is still a possibility might not happen from a merger perspective. If it doesn't happen, and it looked like there for a minute that it wasn't, it's kind of back on the table again. It could be, you know, pretty devastating. If it does happen, the long-term outlook is going to stay good. But I'm up 41% in the stock. I would sell out for sure.
Hey, that's perfect. Thank you so much. I sure appreciate your help.
You're welcome. Thanks, Lynn. I appreciate your partnership. God bless.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Bye.
We don't have time to get to Richard. You're on deck, brother. So we'll get right back to phones right after the short break. It's a short break. We've got a line open, 844-707-5533. If you want to queue your call, now's a good time to do it. We got a line open. We got another hour and 15 minutes left. So stay with us. Put your questions up. Financial issues. We're here to help you be the best steward you can be with all God, with all that God has given you, and give you a greater understanding of how to do that. We'll be right back.
The opinions and recommendations expressed by Dan are his own and do not necessarily represent the opinions of this station or any of the show's sponsors.
Welcome back. 844-707-5533. 844-707-5533. If you've got a question, somebody's asking me on our website about IN27. I can't find it now to say the person's name so they know. Art. Art is asking me about IN27. It wasn't Art, though. It was somebody else. Art is saying several weeks ago you suggested that if it dropped into a certain number to dollar cost average down today or wait. No, I'd get it now. I'd probably take it now. I still think it could go below, but I would, if you're waiting to purchase IN27, the dollar cost average down, I would probably start thinking about it now. So, yeah. Let me go to Mark. Mark's calling from Texas. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Dan. Hey.
I'm doing good.
I don't have a question about a stock, but I got a question about the border, because I believe Trump should do the tariffs. And the reason I believe that is because a couple of years ago they were saying that 820,000 Texans alone, were assaulted, murdered, raped, and killed. And I realized that with the border being open, Texas is like a big filter, and we're the very beginning, so we catch all the trash and everything that trickles mm-hmm. all the way up to the north is nothing really bad.
Yeah.
And, you know, we got companies down here that are just totally we got a company just last month that got busted over here. I do pickup and delivery. I'm a P&D driver for a trucking company.
Mm-hmm.
And there's places that last month, 270 illegals were taken out of one customer's place. And it's like that here all the time in Dallas. You can go to every warehouse. They're full of them.
Wow.
But another thing is that the Dallas Metroplex area, we're a sanctuary city.
Yeah.
There are 900 police officers short right now, and they're talking about dumping thousands of illegals into downtown Dallas. Obama did 10,000, and now they're talking about bumping even more. I mean, how much is enough? How many people got to get hurt, raped, murdered, or killed before we start doing something? I'm grateful Trump's doing something instead of nothing.
You know what? I'm with you 100%, Mark. I mean, I say that, and my position this morning was that right now, as we speak, and yet this started yesterday, Wednesday, Mexico turned back a huge flow of coming into their southern border. They have sent their National Guard and their military down there, and they've ramped up their police presence down there. And they're ramping it up even more today, they announced. So what I'm saying is we need that. We need them to participate in it. And I say, but all I'm saying is give them a chance to see if they mean it. Because right now they say if they get tariffs on Monday, they're pulling all those troops out. They're not going to do anything. They're just going to let it all come into America, and we're going to be even more devastated. So I say Trump ought to say, I'm going to postpone the tariffs for 3 weeks. I'm going to see if you can show us that you are meaning well by what you're saying. You're actually going to be consistent and every day fight this battle with us. But if we permanently release you from these tariffs, we don't believe that you're not going to stop doing what you're doing. So my position is, these tariffs did exactly what I believe President Trump wanted to do. It got their attention. And they are immediately doing something about it and say they want to do more. Let's give them 3 weeks. If you can 3 weeks continue to fight this battle along with us, then we'll go another 3 weeks. But I think you keep doing that to keep their attention so they keep you know, fighting with this. Look, we have a national emergency at these borders. It is unbelievable. You heard that clip I played from the head of the Border Patrol. I mean, it is a crisis. And we don't have enough people that can even begin to stop this. And we need Mexico's help. So I think it's the right thing to do. We're not getting any help from Congress. We've got an entire political party that doesn't care a lick about protecting the American people, protecting our cities at all. They don't care a lick about it. They're gonna turn the entire country into a dumpster if they continue to allow this to go on, but they don't care. And they have control of the House of Representatives. We gave them that control, but they have the control of the House of Representatives. And this is what we're getting. And they're running on this notion that they don't care. They can say they care, but they don't care. They're not doing anything. They should be supporting this president with a wall. This wall should be all hands on deck getting built. We should be supporting our Border Patrol. We're not doing any of it. So the president's doing the right thing by instituting the tariffs. I haven't said that was wrong. What I've said is they've immediately made a move. Let's see how serious they are. Let's say, all right, we'll give you 3 weeks to keep doing it. And then we'll give you another 3 weeks. But let's see if you can continue to turn away in your southern border all of these immigrants that want to come here. And now Mexico is resisting a law that we are trying to put into place in our negotiating. That seems to be the stumbling block. And the law is the same law that we have in many other places, that we are removing we want to remove the law that says that they can declare sanctuary or they can declare coming to America because, you know, that forces us to allow them to come in. And they need to be able to do that in Mexico because internationally you declare asylum in the first nation that you go to. So if you're being oppressed in Honduras, you should be able to go to Guatemala and declare asylum. And then if you're leaving Guatemala, you should be able to leave there unless you're not getting the asylum, which you should get, and try to keep it that way. But they won't agree to that. Mexico won't agree to that. And that's the stumbling block. So I say, let's give them 3 weeks to do what they're going to do. Let's get all the help we can get until eventually maybe we have to put the tariffs on. But I don't think we have to do it right now. And I don't think we should do it right now. We should give them this opportunity to make it right. If they don't do it, hey, let's just go with a 25% tariff. We bear the pain in our economy because we're getting a lot more pain anyway, as you've indicated, in these sanctuary cities, and do it. But let's give them this chance to make it work. And it seems like they're working hard, but maybe it's just a show to get us to let it up. If it is, then we put it back on in 3 weeks, like we said we were going to do.
Thank you, Dan.
All right, Mark, thank you. Great stuff. I'm glad you weighed in. 844-707-5533. It's not great stuff, though, for what's happening in Dallas and all these other cities. It's absolutely criminal. I said many, many years ago, what we need to ramp up is enforcement of corporate America. And we should have enforcement agents go into corporations and fining them for every illegal they have, fining them big time. And you wait and see how the hiring stops. And if the hiring stops, the illegals stop coming in. 844-707-5533. Let me go to Jim in Montana. Hey, Jim, how are you? Good to hear from you.
Great, Dan. It's a pleasure talking to you again. We miss you up here, but...
Well, I look forward to getting back, Jim.
Well, we'd love to have you. I just wanted to say on your commentaries that you're right on. The problem, let me weigh in a little bit on your last statement. Coming from a city in Iowa that was the most diversified in Iowa, manufacturers or businesses will do the things that are required of them in hiring persons of different ethnic groups. The problem is that there's a big market out there for illegal papers. And somehow that needs to stop also, because the companies can only go so far in checking on these people, and if they have the right documentation, then they let them work. Mm. And so the government needs to find ways of improving the identification process.
Well, that's a point that I hadn't really thought of, and I know you've been actual city managers in a number of different places. Right. So you know that firsthand. That's great. That's great information. I appreciate you sharing that, Jim.
Not a problem. Just had a question this morning, Dan, on IT-36.
Yes.
Is there's some good news out there on some of the things that they're doing. Is this maybe a good time to cost average down?
I would say it is, Jim. It's probably going to end up back on my buy list. I've been holding out for a couple things. I still think they may dip down into negative territory yet at some point in time this year. But yeah, I've been waiting for a couple of things. And now I'm starting to think as of last night that this may be as close to their 52-week low as they're going to get. So yeah, I would dollar cost average. But I would tell you this, Jim, real quick. I got to run. But I would tell you this real quick. Let's say you want a dollar cost average with $100. I would only do 50 now. Let's wait another couple weeks. There's a risk in that you might miss out because it might just keep going up. But you might want to think about doing that. Jim, I sure appreciate you. Thank you so much for weighing in with us.
We love you, brother.
Thank you, man. We love you guys, too. God bless. Folks, we appreciate all of you being with us. I know some of you have got to leave us. If you do, please have a wonderful day of worship on Sunday. Pray for our country. Pray for our leaders that they might have an awakening. Please, we need that desperately. Have a great day of worship, a great day. God bless. More financial issues right after this.
If we ever forget that we're one nation under God, then we will be a nation gone under.
Thank you for joining us. This has been an FISM.